everyone. I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Welcome back. Thank you all for joining us for today's case. I'm always struck by cases where the victim disappears in a matter of minutes or even seconds sometimes. And today's case definitely falls into that category. It's an unusual one. There's very little information out there until about 25 years after the disappearance, but we'll discuss why that might be.
Yeah, it's like Barbara Bullock and Dewan Sims. They seemingly disappeared in a matter of minutes, like you were saying.
Yes, I thought of those two cases that we covered when I was researching this one. You know, different circumstances, but definitely kind of similar. And
right.
Polly Melton is a little bit similar too. So definitely interesting. I've been thinking about this case a lot, so I'm eager to discuss it today with you and then to hear what our listeners think after they've heard it too. Let's get into it. Amy Sue Paniak was 13 years old at the time of her disappearance in 1989. Amy grew up in Maple Grove, Minnesota, a northwest suburb of Minneapolis. She lived with her sister, who was 5 years younger than her mom, Susan, and she also lived with Susan's husband, who I believe was her adoptive father, Marshall. Reports vary as his relationship to Amy goes. Some call him her father, others say stepfather, others say non-biological father, as well as what I just said, adoptive father. What is clear is that he's not Amy's biological father. He was most likely her adoptive father. I'm making this distinction because of a small detail that I'll mention toward the end today. And despite that explanation, we will simply refer to him as Marshall throughout this case. At the time of Amy's disappearance, Marshall worked as a computer programmer for the University of Minnesota, and I couldn't find what Susan's employment situation was at that time. Amy has been described as smart, social, and kind, but sadly, according to some of her classmates, she was a victim of bullying for years. Reportedly, there was an especially cruel incident where she was pushed downstairs while using crutches.
Did anyone know what the reason was?
No idea. It was just kind of one line.
Crazy.
Yeah. And despite that, it did, though, seem that Amy still had good friends. So it's not that she was without friends. There were, I guess, some people who bullied her, unfortunately. Amy's family remembers her beautiful singing voice, and she seemed to have a proclivity for creativity in general. Prior to her disappearance, Amy began suffering from severe headaches as well as seizures, according to her mom, Susan. There are a number of medical conditions that could have caused these symptoms, and they'd begun testing before she disappeared, but a diagnosis had not been established. Doctors were, however, able to rule out a brain tumor. Susan has also suggested that Amy was showing signs of bipolar disorder, but again, there was no diagnosis, and it's unclear what behavior led to this idea. It's also unclear exactly when all of these symptoms began and if Amy's teachers or fellow students ever witnessed Amy experiencing a seizure or a severe headache. And I asked my sister about this because she used to be a teacher, and she said she would certainly be aware of this kind of condition. And teachers were even aware of things like seasonal allergies. So I don't know if Amy's teachers were aware or if this started during the summer break, so they wouldn't have had a need to be aware yet.
I'm probably getting ahead of myself here, but is that going to play any part into her disappearance?
Kind of, but not really. Super vague response, but you'll know what I mean here shortly. Like, it might play into it, but it might not.
Okay.
Amy's family had a 140-acre farm north of where they lived in Isanti County, where they grew vegetables. And on Saturday, August 5th, 1989, the family planned to go to the farm to tend crops. But Amy's sister had a seemingly last-minute event that she and Susan needed to attend together.
So they didn't live on the farm? They just had a farm that they owned, but they didn't live at?
Exactly. They lived in Maple Grove, Minnesota, and then they had this separate property out in Isanti County.
How far away was it? Did you say already?
No, it's a little over an hour drive away from where they lived.
Okay. So does anyone else tend to it?
No, sounded like it was just them. Okay. Yeah. Amy was excited for that evening because she and Susan planned to go shopping for the upcoming school year that was about to start. Amy was going into eighth grade, so they planned to shop for new clothes and school supplies. So since Amy's sister and her mom, Susan, were unable to join them, Amy and Marshall set out together on the drive that would take a little over an hour, as I said, at about 11 a.m. Amy and Marshall spent several hours at the farm. Amy played and picked raspberries while Marshall worked. They departed the farm around 4 p.m. to head back to Maple Grove. When they were just about 2 miles or 3.2 kilometers from home, they stopped at Holiday Gas Station in Osseo shortly before 5 p.m. So Osseo is just a nearby city or town to Maple Grove. This area around the gas station looks different today from how it looked in 1989. Today, it looks like a fairly typical suburban area, but in 1989, it was less developed and there were more fields and farmland nearby. Now, almost all reports state that they stopped specifically so Marshall could use the restroom. But in some accounts from Susan, she explains that Marshall filled up his tank with gas and then used the restroom. So using the restroom was secondary. The primary reason for stopping was to get gas. And this might seem like a small detail, but do you see where I'm going with that?
Yeah, somewhat. I see where you're going with that. I mean, on one hand, you're a couple miles away from home. So if the reports are coming out that all you had to do was use the bathroom, then just wait until you get home. You're a couple miles away from home and use the bathroom. But on the other hand, if you're stopping at a gas station and you needed to get gas, then yeah, absolutely stop and get gas before you get home so you have a full tank before whatever you're going to do.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking. I think it's an important distinction in this case. So the crux of our story is correct, but I wanted to point out these discrepancies that pretty much every news article says he stopped to use the restroom, yet it seems like the family is saying that no, he stopped to get gas and then he used the restroom secondarily, which would be totally normal. So Marshall went inside the gas station to request the keys to the restroom, which was actually located outside of the station, and then he left Amy behind in the car. I don't think it's that part is weird to leave Amy behind in the car. She was 13 years old. I don't really know what she would do if she got out of the car. I guess just wander around the store, but keeping in mind that this is not necessarily an unsafe area, not notorious for crime. If it was an unsafe area, then I think this would be a little bit different. When Marshall returned from using the restroom, he immediately noticed that Amy was no longer in his vehicle. Marshall's first thought was that she must have needed to use the restroom as well, but when he saw a woman leave the women's restroom, who was clearly not Amy, he realized that was not the case. He then looked inside the gas station and around it, but it became apparent that Amy was no longer in the area. Marshall used a payphone to call home. He wanted to know if Amy somehow made it back home on foot, but when Susan answered, she told him Amy was not home.
I suppose I'm wondering how long he was in the bathroom for, because, I mean, if your first reaction is to call home, and it's about 2 miles away, that would be about a 40-minute walk, right? On average, if you're walking, that's about an average pace, about 20 minutes a mile. So yeah, I guess my question is, how long was he in there?
This was not, I'll put it this way, the impression I got was that this was not a quick in and out bathroom situation. I don't know exactly how long he was in the bathroom, but I would say at least several minutes. I know that's kind of vague, but I have to be vague because I don't know how long he was in there. So yeah, it seems unlikely, even if he were in there for, let's say, 10 minutes, I know the house was within walking distance from the gas station, but it's still 2 miles away. She likely wouldn't have made it home within that period, but I guess it would just be kind of a first, one of the first reactions you might have to call home.
Okay. If it's, sorry for the listeners, if it's a number two situation, I'm 2 miles away from home, I'm not going to stop at a gas station. I'm just going to go home because I'm so close and I'm going to do that, you know? And sounds like he was spending a while in there.
I know. So then it makes you think it wasn't an emergency. Everyone's different, I guess. I really don't know. I wish we knew how long he was away in the restroom, though, because that seems like an important detail in this case.
Yeah, it really does.
So Marshall then called the police, who reportedly told him to go home so the police could come to them and interview him and Susan at the same time. This is the first problem. We're talking about a minor who vanished. The starting point should be the place she vanished from. The woman Marshall saw leave the restroom, for example, could have been a key witness. Did she see Amy in the car? Any suspicious people near the vehicle? Really, anything she saw before she went into the restroom, or anyone else, for that matter, could have been useful information. Although it's unknown how many people were at the station at the same time as Marshall and Amy. And I could not find a single report that indicated anyone saw Amy at the gas station that day other than Marshall. Now, the initial investigation was quite lackluster, so there are a few possibilities, right? Maybe they didn't get to the people in time for them to actually recall seeing Amy and Marshall. Or maybe they did find people who were at the gas station at that time and they didn't see Amy, or they couldn't track anyone down by the time they started to try that was there that evening when Marshall and Amy were.
So I'm sure you'll get into this, but did the police question the workers that were working at the gas station that evening or afternoon?
It's all a little fuzzy. Police have been really quiet in this case as far as what they've done. And again, couldn't find anyone who could confirm that they saw them there. So I'm afraid that maybe they got to people a little too late to be able to remember. Marshall proceeded to his home where he met Susan and a police officer who is now retired named Jeff Garland. Marshall and Susan were initially concerned that Amy could have experienced an intense headache, became disoriented, and wandered off away from Marshall's vehicle. But when Jeff Garland was interviewed by the Star Tribune years later in 2014, he relayed that the call was treated as a routine juvenile runaway report. According to that same report, there was a call from Susan and Marshall to the police to report Amy running away several months prior in May 1989. And then there was another call on June 28th to report domestic violence. According to the Star Tribune, Susan said this incident was related to Amy's seizures. Allegedly, Amy was having a seizure and flailing her arms around in the direction of Susan. If accurate, it's completely unclear how that translates to a domestic violence incident. Then there were two runaway reports the day after that incident, and then another the following day. But it seemed Amy always came back home quickly in those incidents.
So were these calls actually factual? I mean, did she run away? Not even run away. Did she just start walking away and she was like 100 yards away and they called the police and the police showed up? And I mean, when they showed up, was she still gone or did she show up again? I mean, was this just blown out of proportion that she had run away and they decided to call the police?
Well, I don't know exactly, but I can tell you in total, there were 65 emergency calls from their home over the course of 30 years. However, details about those calls were purged in 1999 in compliance with the city's record retention policy since the records weren't considered to be part of an active investigation. So we'll likely never know the details of these calls, but it doesn't, I mean, if Amy always returned, you do kind of wonder what were the circumstances.
Right.
If Amy did run away, you know, on more than one occasion, I wonder what the root cause was.
I wonder what they classify as running away. Did she just walk off to a neighbor's?
See, I don't know.
They're saying she's running away.
But if she's leaving the home without telling anyone, why, right?
Right.
What was her home life like?
Did she have
friends who influenced her? If she's still being bullied, did that have something to do with it? We don't know. There's a lot up in the air about these 65 calls that were made and what exactly was going on. But you start to kind of get a sense, if there were previous runaway calls, as has been reported, you start to get a sense of why maybe this one in 1989 was being treated the way it was.
That's so many calls.
Yeah, I just really wish we had the details about them. Jeff Garland, the responding officer on the day Amy vanished, recalled that Susan and Marshall were frustrated with Amy's behavior and were afraid she wandered off to have sex or drink alcohol.
At 13?
Seems super weird. Yes, super weird to say that. But Susan has later directly disputed this, saying there was nothing unusual about Amy's behavior before her disappearance. She claimed, you know, this is not what we said. The only thing that was a little bit off was that apparently the night before, Amy had a headache. And she stated Amy had been acting normally for about a month prior. She also indicated that there were no family disputes at that time. She has disputed much of the original police report, indicating that at the time, Officer Garland would repeat their statements back to them, but he would do it incorrectly, according to them, and they tried to have it corrected. And I think it's important to get both sides here, but if there were these previous runaway reports, like I said, you can see why the police didn't jump into action right off the bat. Normally, it's frustrating when police write off a missing minor as a runaway, but in this case, if the family had reported this before and she always returned, then they likely aren't going to put resources toward the case immediately.
Yeah, it's like the boy who cried wolf, right?
Yes. And not saying that's right. I think we need more context on the prior incidents. Those could have been very different from what happened at the gas station, but it's just the reality of what occurred here. I also believe this is why Amy's disappearance didn't receive much media attention in the beginning. Even some of her classmates weren't aware that she was missing until the school year started and she wasn't there. And then they began seeing her face on milk cartons. Her classmates were perplexed by the lack of concern around Amy's disappearance. About 2 months after Amy's disappearance, on October 22nd, 1989, an 11-year-old boy named Jacob Wetterling was abducted by a masked gunman in St. Joseph, Minnesota, and he was later murdered. St. Joseph is about an hour drive away from Osseo. His case went unsolved for many years until 2015, but his abduction was big news and is often referenced when Amy's case is brought up because of the short time and distance between them. But their cases are not believed to be connected. Regarding Amy's case, Jeff Garland told the Star Tribune in 2014, quote, "There may have been more that we could have done. Taking it as a runaway, we thought we were just following protocols. Jacob Wetterling changed a lot of things. Now we understand we have to do much more in the first 24 hours, end quote. So he openly addressed the shortcomings of the initial investigation into Amy's disappearance. Over the years, there were various sightings of Amy. One woman who grew up with Amy believes she saw her working at a strip club in the Midwest a few years after she disappeared. Additionally, someone at a train station on the West Coast was approached by a woman in 1992 who said, "I'm Amy Paniak." If true, this is an unusual encounter. If it were not Amy, then Paniak is an uncommon last name, so you wonder if the person had familiarity with Amy's case. And if it was Amy, how did she get all the way to the West Coast?
Did it become a national case?
Not really. I most of the coverage I found in this case was local coverage. So it does seem strange for someone on the West Coast to say, "I'm Amy Paniak." I would love for this person who apparently had this experience to come forward and maybe give a little more detail. Did it look like Amy? I mean, I just have so many questions about these sightings. It's also unclear where exactly these sightings occurred. And although they were reported to the police, none of the sightings have been confirmed or verified. In 1990, the year after Amy disappeared, a private investigator claimed that Amy was a victim of a sex trafficking ring, but quote, by the time police had stepped in, the ring had already moved on, end quote. We can get into this theory more later, but I have so many questions about this. If there was this sex trafficking ring operating and they moved their operations elsewhere, law enforcement isn't just going to say, aw, shucks, guess we can't catch them. They would have continued to investigate. So I have questions about the validity of this private investigator's statement, although it's incomplete. We don't know enough about his information. Maybe if we had more information on this, we could better understand how he came to that conclusion. Susan has stated that she pressed police to investigate Amy's disappearance once school resumed in the fall, but without a suspect or evidence of a crime, they didn't take action until 1990 when they searched their home. Susan believes there were leads not followed up on or looked into, but the Maple Grove police captain asserted that the case has been active and a priority since 1989. Over the years, Amy's parents kept the same phone number in case Amy ever attempted to call them. They also remained in the house Amy called home, and it would be this very house that was subjected to a major search by police in May 2014, 25 years after Amy disappeared. Susan and Marshall were forced to leave their home for about a week, so the FBI, the Hennepin County Sheriff's deputies, and the Maple Grove police could search the property.
25 years after? What? I mean, surely they have lead or something for why they're searching the home. Would you, I'm sure you know what they're searching for, so I'd love to know what that is.
You're a little too sure. I don't know. And investigators have refrained from sharing what prompted the search, but they stated that it was not necessarily one piece of information that brought them there. Rather, it was a process that brought them there.
Yeah, even though we don't know what prompted the search, it's somewhat telling that we know where the investigation is going.
Yeah, I think that's how it appeared, definitely. And some of Susan and Marshall's neighbors said that they didn't see Susan or Marshall much over the years, but they always thought that something was amiss at the house. They recounted extensive landscaping that allegedly went on at their house in the years after Amy disappeared. Susan claimed these rumors were being spread by neighbors that they never got along with, but she acknowledged that if police received that kind of information, they couldn't ignore it. Despite this, police have not confirmed if reports of major landscaping at the house had anything to do with their search of the home. And I looked at their home on Google Street View, going back as far as 2008, and it's interesting because they have a lot of trees around the house, pretty thick vegetation, and when the trees have all their leaves, the house is hardly visible, and it kind of sticks out like a sore thumb compared to the other homes in the neighborhood. Because although there are a good number of trees in the neighborhood, none of the other homes nearby stand out like theirs. This kind of aligns with statements from neighbors about landscaping that occurred over the years. It's really neither here nor there. I mean, I'm sure everyone in the neighborhood knew who they were at this point because of Amy's disappearance. So they could have wanted more privacy around their home.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. You're kind of the talk of the neighborhood, talk of the town, your daughter's gone missing. You want a little more privacy. You put up more trees just to do that, right?
Yeah, it's a lot of trees, but I kind of think that could be why they did that. And most neighbors said they rarely saw anyone outside of the home over the years. Now, the search of the home kicked off in May 2014. Susan said about the matter, quote, I've been trying to get law enforcement to do something for 25 years now. And having the fact that they're going to do something, even if it doesn't make much sense to me, is wonderful. I just gave them permission to do whatever they wanted to do, so I don't know what's going on, end quote. It's great that they were cooperative with the search, but it would have happened regardless because law enforcement had a search warrant. The investigators zeroed in on the backyard of the home as their specific area of focus. They did search inside too, though. Heavy machinery was brought in to excavate the backyard. A patio in the backyard was even torn up. The search lasted for 6 days, and some items of interest were collected, but police would not comment on the specifics. Susan stated that file cabinets and bookshelves were emptied, photos of Amy, some of her childhood writings and artwork, a passport, some of Amy's baby teeth, and her birth certificate were removed.
I feel like excavation of an entire area is pretty rare unless you know what you're looking for.
I was super interested in this excavation. Probable cause for a search warrant is supposed to be based on reliable information that right. indicates a crime has taken place at the location or that a search will produce evidence of a crime. So what was that information? So I think neighbors are just like, wait a second, wasn't this an abduction? Why are they, if Amy was abducted, yeah. why are they searching the home of her parents? Then, shortly after that search was completed, the family farm where Amy was believed to be shortly before her disappearance was searched as well, with several areas on the property being dug up. That search went on for 4 days, but again, police chose to withhold details about the outcome. I honestly think the police wouldn't have said a word about any of these searches if they could avoid it. I don't think they wanted it to be public, but they didn't have a choice when these major searches are going on. People are seeing it happen. The news is all over it. There was no way to avoid addressing it.
Yeah, there's two targeted areas where they're performing this excavation, and it's both of the places where Amy would have been.
And where she wouldn't be if she was abducted.
Right, exactly.
So the Maple Grove police captain shared that post-search, there were still no suspects to name, but Amy's case was still a priority and DNA evidence would become a focus. What they mean by that is a mystery to me. Without a body and so many years later, it's unknown what kind of DNA evidence they could possibly be referencing. I suppose they could be comparing DNA from unidentified remains that have been recovered over the year to Amy's DNA. But other than that, I'm not sure. Although Susan and Marshall were not named as suspects, as we've kind of said, these searches had to increase the suspicions of people in the community. These were not the first searches of the family home and farm. Police obtained a search warrant in 2007 and they searched the home for about a day and they searched the farm too. But these searches were certainly not as involved as those that occurred in 2014. The family farm actually hadn't been used since 1993, 4 years after Amy's disappearance. As with the searches in 2014, police were tight-lipped about any results, and police have been tight-lipped in this case in general. I watched one kind of press conference where the captain was being questioned about the searches, and almost every question he was asked, he said he couldn't comment or he wasn't going to comment, which is fair. I just think they're really keeping it close to the vest here, and they must not think that the information they don't really need the public, I guess. They've really kept a lot in, and I respect that in an open investigation, but it has been almost 35 years. So you wonder maybe if they gave a little more information, it could help.
Yeah, it seems like since they're being so tight-lipped with the investigation, it seems like they probably have an idea of what happened and they just need a little bit more to make an arrest.
Maybe. Right? It might be one of those cases, but it seems like they're pretty stuck right now. Very little information has come out since those searches, but several years ago in 2019, local news outlets shared that the Maple Grove police were interested in learning the identity of Amy's biological father. And that's kind of why I made that point in the beginning, but that tells us that they never spoke with him at the time of Amy's disappearance if they don't know his identity. but we don't know if they don't know his identity because Susan doesn't know his identity or if she has not shared that information with them. By all accounts, Susan has been cooperative with the investigation, so it kind of seems the former is more likely. But then again, how would the public help them determine who her biological father was unless he heard the news and came forward?
Do we know where her biological father lived? Was he also in Minnesota or was it somewhere else?
That's what I mean. Like, I have no idea. Police don't even know. They don't know who he is, so they can't know where he lived, I guess. I mean, I believe Susan had been in the Minnesota area for a long time, so seems likely that that's where they met. Yeah. But we just know nothing about this guy. And to date, from what I know, they haven't found him. Unless, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they did find him and just didn't tell anyone. That could be possible too. I imagine they want to rule him out and establish his whereabouts at the time of Amy's disappearance. There are several theories and possibilities in Amy's case, and I think it makes sense to start with what Amy's parents thought most likely happened at the time and then talk about what they currently think happened. From what I could find, their initial biggest concern was that Amy suffered a seizure while Marshall was in the restroom that caused her to become disoriented and wander off. A theory like this seems possible early on, but as time went on, you would think she would be found or someone would have come upon her to help her. If this is what occurred, I suppose it's possible someone saw Amy in a vulnerable state and took advantage of that by abducting her. But you also have to wonder, what are the odds that Amy suffers from an episode that causes her to be so disoriented that she wanders away, never to be found again in the few unknown number of minutes that Marshall was in the restroom?
Yeah, like if she's in the middle of having a seizure, I can't imagine that she's going to get up and just start walking. She's having a seizure. I mean, even if it's after she's completely disoriented, I don't imagine that she's going to get very far.
I think that's the key word, get very far. Like, yeah, maybe she could have gotten out of the car and moved from where she was, but to get so far that she's nowhere in sight while having a seizure or just a really intense headache just seems unusual.
Yeah.
And her parents don't seem to think this is what happened anymore, but at the time it seemed to be the initial theory and concern. Police have not commented on this theory or any theory for that matter, but it seems like an unlikely scenario. Susan and Marshall now believe that Amy was abducted and could even still be alive. It's not very difficult for Susan to believe that Amy's still alive because she's stated that she has no evidence that Amy is dead. Stories of people who have been abducted, held in captivity, then later discovered alive, give her hope that Amy could still be out there and that they will be reunited one day. She fears that Amy could be a victim of sex trafficking, which could have been because of that private investigator who shared this information with her, or it could be her own thoughts. And Marshall told the Star Tribune, quote, "Amy didn't run off. It was organized crime that did this," end quote. However, while I think it's possible that Amy was a victim of an abduction, that is not how people usually become victims of sex trafficking. Sex traffickers usually attempt to build a relationship with their potential victim first, and there's no information that I could find to indicate there was someone in Amy's life who could have done this to her. But this segues into the theory that Amy could have been abducted by a lone kidnapper. Before we move on to that theory, I should note that violent crime was uncommon in Osseo where they stopped at the gas station. Again, like we talked about before, maybe if we were discussing an area where violent crime was running rampant, we would think about this a little bit differently. Even though the majority of abductions are carried out by family members, you can imagine a scenario where Marshall and Amy arrive at the gas station. Someone sitting in a vehicle sees Marshall leave Amy alone in the car, and they see it as an opportunity. Maybe they approach the vehicle, see it's unlocked, and force her out. The biggest flaw with this theory is that the abduction would have had to transpire without anyone taking notice? Could someone really have pulled this off in a few minutes? I suspect Amy would have fought back and screamed, but no one saw or heard a thing. You would think Marshall could have even heard a scream since the restroom was outside of the station, although I don't know its proximity to the vehicle.
That's exactly what I was thinking. If it were to have happened right there in the gas station, then I'm sure Amy would have screamed and fought back and Marshall would have heard that.
Yeah, Marshall or someone else.
Anyone else, that woman that was in the restroom.
Exactly. Yeah, someone would have seen a commotion. Even if that woman maybe wasn't there yet when this all went down, there's at least the gas station employee. Wouldn't they have heard something or seen a struggle? I mean, seems like they would. Now, if this is what occurred, then you ask yourself, what would it take to resolve this case? And sadly, most likely it would take a confession from the abductor or someone with intimate information related to Amy's case will have to come forward to reveal what happened, or her remains will need to be found if she's no longer alive. I do think there's one more scenario here. Maybe Amy was upset with Marshall for some reason, although that's never been stated, or maybe she got tired of waiting for him in the restroom. She got out of the car to walk home or kind of wander around, and then she was abducted from there. I see that as being more conceivable than her being forcibly removed from Marshall's car. A theory that some people focus on in this case is that Marshall and or Susan were behind Amy's disappearance. Although they've never been named as suspects, they have been cooperative and they have clean criminal records, as well as their complete denial of any involvement. I think the story is simply hard to conceive. Statistically, they are the most likely suspects. To the best of my knowledge, no one can confirm Amy was at the gas station other than Marshall, and the searches conducted at their properties cast a certain light on them.
There's definitely a reason why those searches were conducted, right?
Both. There was a reason. Yeah.
Yeah, both at their house in the backyard and also at the farm that was an hour away, and it was targeted searches, right? It was targeted digs.
Yes. Yeah. You're right. There was a reason or multiple reasons. We just don't know what they were. And at the same time, though, I'm not sure what evidence is out there. I'm just not sure in any direction what evidence police have since they've investigated this case over the years.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like they're releasing any of that information, right?
No. And unfortunately, this is the theory that's easiest to follow. It doesn't take a lot of mental work to understand how this could have played out. And it would explain why no one saw or heard a thing at the gas station. But just because it might be the simplest explanation doesn't make it the explanation. There's also a theory that Marshall could have been responsible without the knowledge of Susan. Susan could be completely in the dark here. Little is known about the relationship between Marshall and Amy. I don't know if they had a good or bad relationship, so we can't even talk of any potential motive here. And it's difficult to talk about parents being responsible for something happening to their children in general. So thinking about it in this case is the possibility of it is hard, but every other possibility is dark too, right? If Amy were abducted or she was put into a sex trafficking operation, like all of it is really grim.
Yeah, any outcome is just awful.
And in some ways, though, this theory feels the most likely, yet there's not much to support it. When you really boil it down with the information we have as the public, there aren't a lot of points that we can attach to it to say this makes this theory more likely.
Yeah. I guess we never knew if Amy was actually with Marshall.
At the gas station? Yeah, we don't know.
At the gas station, exactly.
Yeah. I do kind of find it interesting that they were supposed to all go to the farm that day. Remember how I said that in the beginning?
Right.
The whole family was supposed to go. And then her sister had something come up that Susan needed to go with her to do. I don't know what that was, but you kind of wonder how this day would have turned out if they all went. Maybe it would have been the same outcome, but probably not. Who's to say? Now, I said that Marshall and Susan don't have criminal records, but I found a number of lawsuits they have filed, and these lawsuits are not related to Amy's disappearance, but I found them to be interesting. I said lawsuits, but there was one personal injury claim filed against Susan in 1989, just about 2 months before Amy's disappearance. I couldn't access the documents online related to this case because of the age of it, but I can see a very high-level summary. And from what I could find, Susan and the plaintiff reached a settlement outside of court. Then between 1995 and 2006, Susan filed 3 personal injury claims against various entities and individuals. Marshall was a co-plaintiff on 2 of those cases. I found 1 additional lawsuit filed by Marshall against his previous employer, the University of Minnesota, which from what I could find, he alleged that the university had violated the Minnesota Human Rights Act by refusing to reasonably accommodate his disability. This was related to his claim that he had an asthma disability associated with exposure to certain allergens in multiple different working environments at or within the University of Minnesota. So I'm not asserting that these claims had anything to do with Amy's disappearance, but as I said, I found them to be interesting. I will have the link to where you can read more about that last one I mentioned with Marshall. The other ones, I really could not access the documents, but I did find a little more information about that last one, so you can read more about it if you'd like. I really did think it was interesting.
In my opinion, that's more lawsuits than I would expect for anyone else in a lifetime.
In my opinion, I agree. I agree. And the 65 phone calls to emergency services also seems like, I mean, I've been fortunate. I've never had to call 911 in my life. So
that's an ample amount
to get to 65. If that information is accurate, I'd have to start calling a lot. So somehow, in my opinion, it seems like these two factors could be kind of like something's in common here. I don't know exactly what it is, but yeah, I'll leave it at that. Susan and Marshall are getting older and have some health issues that they battle with. Susan has been open about her fight for finding Amy and welcomes any media attention Amy's case gets because it could mean her story could reach the right person who has information. Amy would be 47 years old today, and we will share the latest age progress photo of Amy on our Instagram at Key to the Case Podcast. So definitely take a look. And if you have information related to Amy Sue Paniak's disappearance, you are asked to call the Maple Grove Police Department at 763-494-6100. And man, do I hope police are onto something here. I think the good thing about them being so tight-lipped is maybe they know a lot more than we know, and they could be closer to reaching a resolution than we realize. I really hope that's the case. And it makes me really sad to think that Amy was 13 years old when she disappeared and she never got to realize her potential or to live the kind of life she would have wanted. Thank you all for listening to this case. We hope you continue to tune in each week. That's all for now, but we'll be back next week with a new case. Bye.
Bye.